Coming to you from the newsroom of PCJ Radio International, this is Focus Asia Pacific. A new Catholic missionary deported from Papua New Guinea says it's unclear how he was supposed to have breached the conditions of his visa. Despite a court order staying his deportation, Douglas Tennant was forced to leave PNG on Monday after being told by immigration officials he abused conditions of his religious worker visa. Mr. Tennant had been working at the Rabu Catholic Archdiocese, where among his roles was helping people affected by the Malaysian company Rembuan Hydro Palm Olive Operations. Now back in New Zealand, Mr. Tennant told Johnny Blades that West Palmio landowners requested help over the way the company took up the lease on their land.
The way it was drafted and the way the people were pressured to sign it was unjust. People signed an agreement they should have never signed without proper legal advice, and also as the lessors, they should have been the people who drafted the agreement. Unfortunately, it was Rumbaan Hinjal through their lawyers themselves who drafted the agreement.
What sort of response did you get from Rumbaan when you tried to help these people sort of renegotiate a new terms on the agreement?
We did a 25,000 word submission. We put it to them, and then we asked the Rabbeinu Mali, a former prime minister, to help us to talk to them to agree to renegotiate. And we had a three-hour meeting with them in May last year. However, they weren't prepared to renegotiate, hence we had to file legal claims so that the courts in Papua New Guinea could order them to come to a mediation table to make them renegotiate.
Assuming that your deportation is a result of your work in this area, what happened recently to sort of precede this move by immigration to try and force you out of the country?
Good question. And that's one of the things we don't know, because I just got the deportation order, which said I breached my conditions as a religious worker by becoming involved in sensitive land issues in East New Britain. 80% of my work is dealing with land, and land, by virtue of Melanesian society, any negotiations are sensitive. So we're all a bit confused, because that's the only statement I've been given. They haven't gone into any more detail than that. And I'm saying to them, please specify your concerns about the work I've been doing, and then I'll respond to them. But I can't get them to give me some specific complaints. But what my concern is, I'm getting deported for doing my job. And that's where it gets very concerning.
The description of your job at the outset, was this known to immigration?
I was employed as a religious worker as the administrator of the Archdiocese. The Archdiocese of Rabaul has huge land issues which have to be resolved, particularly giving land from former plantations back to local people. The current Archbishop, Archbishop Pumphilo, has a very strong passion for social justice. And so when people petitioned him, he said, well, I will help you, because I'm a lawyer, and because I was a lawyer, he said, Joe, Doug will do the necessary work. It still falls very much within my role as the administrator, because it comes under directions from the Archbishop.
After nearly a decade of negotiations, 11 countries around the Pacific will sign a new free trade agreement in Tonga. Led by Australia and New Zealand, the Pacific Agreement for Closer Economic Relations is being heralded as a new kind of trade deal, linking trade to development and opening small states to the world. But it is also highly controversial, with critics saying it does little for Pacific states and three of the region's largest economies refusing to sign. Jamie Tahana reports.
The agreement, known as PACER Plus, is a deal between the countries of the Pacific Islands Forum and Australia and New Zealand. It's been negotiated for 9 years and is touted by proponents as a new form of deal that's as much about development as it is trade. New Zealand's Trade Minister, Todd McClay, says PACER Plus will give funding to boost exports from Pacific countries and creates rules to make it easier for the region's countries to trade.
It's a high-quality agreement that gives certainty to New Zealand exporters, but really will help the Pacific Island countries meet some of the requirements of international trade. And what that really means is they can transform and modernise their economies, they can look at trade-related infrastructure, they can meet the requirements, the rules that, you know, trading nations of the world now demand.
But there's also been strong opposition to the deal from NGOs, churches, opposition MPs and civil society groups. They say the deal threatens fragile economies and interests of island countries and removes governments' abilities to extract revenue and protect their own interests and resources. Critics also say the deal is unbalanced towards Australia and New Zealand and cements their economic dominance in a region in the face of greater interests from other powers. Those are views shared by three of the region's largest economies, Fiji, Papua New Guinea and Vanuatu, who are refusing to sign the agreement. Stephen Ciro, from the Office of the Chief Trade Advisor, the region's trade body, acknowledges not having the three large economies does weaken the deal somewhat.
Yeah, it does in some ways, but then there are other countries, even though they're relatively smaller, who are willing and eager to, you know, complete this process. So in the long run, we are hopeful that all three countries, PNG, Fiji and Vanuatu, would accede at a later date.
Fiji and Papua New Guinea say they will not sign the agreement until parts of it are renegotiated and rewritten, which Mr. Sedo says will be difficult to do. However, Mr. McClay says he's not worried by the refusal and PACER Plus will always be a flexible work in progress.
I'm quite relaxed about them not being ready to come on board at the moment. After all, this isn't about forcing people's hand. It is about partnership and they will see over time the benefits of the agreement. And for any country that's not quite ready, the door remains open for them to sign when they are.
Despite the debate's polarisation, an analyst of Pacific Issues says the claims of both sides are probably overblown. TNC Pacific Consulting's Tess Newton-Kane says it's unlikely the deal will undermine export industries. On the other hand, she also says many Pacific countries already have tariff-free entry, and the deal doesn't do a lot to remove the barriers that do exist.
Those are things around improving the productive sectors, improving access via biosecurity and phytosanitation rules. Those will still need to be addressed through other means, whether it's through the aid for trade development assistance and part of the deal or elsewhere.
Either way, trade advocates from around the region will be celebrating on Wednesday as the deal is finally signed after 9 years of talks. This is Jamie Tahana.
A Fijian woman is desperately appealing to Immigration New Zealand after recent changes to policy will force her family to separate or move to Fiji. Sangreta Bali has permanent residency. Her husband and son are both New Zealand citizens. But their Fiji-born daughter has been declined entry into the country because she has cerebral palsy. Indira Stewart has more.
While New Zealand has had a strong historical relationship with the region, Fijian woman Sangeeta Bali is among those who say the borders seem to be closing to its Pacific neighbours. Ms. Bali has permanent residency. Her husband and son are both New Zealand citizens, but their daughter Shirti, who has cerebral palsy, has been declined both a residency and visitor's visa into the country. Now Shirti's grandmother, who cared for her in Fiji, has died, and Ms. Bali says they feel hopeless.
I feel like ending my life. I'm so alone. Now I have no support from anyone to look after my daughter. She's trying to get used to it. Maybe at the same time she must be thinking, why my mom is not taking me, but I'm trying all my best. What I can do.
Ms. Bali and her family have been affected by recent policy changes, which now prohibit parents from leaving children off initial residence applications, a loophole which immigration said applicants were exploiting to later bring in sick, disabled or special needs children. But immigration lawyer Richard Small says the policy disregards Pacifica families where informally adopting children out to relatives or parents and having them come back into a parent's care later is a cultural norm.
It's going to have a huge effect. So a child may be with the grandparents. We've had many, many cases like this. The grandparent passes away. They come back into the care of the parents. How, again, this wasn't considered is baffling.
After closing the sibling adult child category and introducing changes to the parent category in 2012, the Minister for Immigration at the time, Nathan Guy, acknowledged that the changes could make it harder for Pacific migrants. It's a category many Pasifika families commonly used to bring over relatives to help with childcare so parents could work, and there's now been a 28% drop in approved Pacific applicants. To counter the falling figures, Immigration Minister Michael Woodhouse has said New Zealand is very generous to Pacific migrants under a scheme which randomly selects registered names out of a ballot across the region. The Pacific Access Quota Scheme selects 75 names each from Kiribati and Tuvalu, 250 in Tonga and in Fiji, and 1,100 from Samoa. But former Tongan immigration officer Sione Palavi says those quotas are never filled because applicants struggle to meet the criteria.
It's really hard, you know. Some people just, you know, it's hard for them to get a job offer here from New Zealand. So some of the applications were declined based on without any job offer, or the job offer doesn't meet the criteria we're looking at.
Mr. Palavi says selected applicants desperate to move to New Zealand are often exploited by employers illegally selling job offers.
There's even a couple here, I met them a few years ago, and they were telling me that how they, you know, they get the job offer, they pay $1,000 something to the employer, you know, and even though they were successful, I mean, for that job offer, but they didn't even get the chance to work for them.
While the skilled migrant category has also seen a 28% drop in Pacific migrants in recent years, Mr. Small says more changes will add further blows to the Pacific. Of the 956 Pacific applicants who were successful last year, only 6% of them would be eligible if they applied now.
The points went from 100 if you had a skilled job offer to 160.
Is that realistically achievable for another person?
No, not at all.
Richard Small believes Pacific migrants are unfairly seen as a risk to New Zealand, and tighter immigration rules are now shutting more of them out. This is Indira Stewart.
And you are listening to Focus Asia Pacific. Keith Powell here with you for the international edition of the program. Fiji's National Party has proposed raising the minimum wage to $5 an hour. But as Selajane Ahole reports, there is support for the increase, but also concerns at its effects on employment.
Fiji's Labour Party leader Mahendra Chaudhry has issued a statement stressing the need for a living wage for Fijians. But Mr. Chaudhry says Labour's solution meets all the groups that are giving their recommendations halfway.
The unions here are demanding $4 an hour, according to a report that has been given to the government by its consultant. A minimum wage of $2.68 is recommended. Now, that's not going to do anything at all in terms of giving relief to the people who are in this category.
Mr. Chaudhry says the possible negative effects are significant.
There is some concern that minimum wage is raised too high. It will result in job losses, and it may impact adversely on the growth of small businesses. So there has to be some sort of a balance between the two competing interests here.
The CEO of the Fiji Commerce and Employers Federation, Nesbitt Hazelman, agrees job losses unlikely.
We have to provide new jobs for young school leavers, first-timers, and a minimum wage of that sort of level will probably just work in the opposite direction. We'd like to see young school leavers, actually first-time job seekers, get into employment, get the necessary skills they need, and work up the wage ladder.
Mr. Hazelman supports the need for a positive change to the minimum wage, but is concerned with job opportunities in Fiji with the change.
It's important that we create an environment where everybody has access to paid employment. Whilst we're not advocating that we should be paying below minimum wage, I'm taking a step back and looking at the fundamentals before we talk about wage increases. It's important to skill our staff. We are getting in a lot of expatriate staff from overseas to trade positions. Why don't we train our local people and get them up to allow them to get decent work and decent wages?
General Secretary of Fiji's Trades Union Congress, Atar Singh, backs the move. Mr. Singh says he was involved in a job evaluation exercise with Fiji's telecom company in 2008, where the workers there proposed $4.86 an hour for unskilled workers.
From that time, Fiji adopted that as a figure as the minimum for unskilled workers that many years ago. What we are now talking about is, I think there is a need for us to move from the concept of minimum wage to the concept of living wage, so that, you know, workers are then treated as people.
Mr. Singh says it's time to support families who rely heavily on the minimum wage.
People who have families and family responsibilities, that they have children to educate, families to feed, and then they need to house them, they need to clothe them, and they also need to be able to put aside a few dollars, you know, a week for the rainy day. That can hardly be done on $268 an hour. And we, as an organization, would support that sort of an increase to minimum wage for any worker, unskilled workers, you know, wholeheartedly.
Sales assistant at Silver's Garment Store Shopaholic Fiji, Dan Matanineke, is sceptical about whether the wage would get to $5, but he says it would be good given the high cost of living.
Cost of living is just going up and up day by day. You know, every day, every new month, they come up with a new... The increased prices of items, it's just ridiculous.
RNZ International sorts comments from the ruling Fiji First Party and the main opposition party, the Social Democratic Liberal Party, but they both declined to say anything. This is Selajane Aholele.
The United Nations says the protection of tropical rainforests in Papua New Guinea is a global responsibility. The comment was made by the UN Development Program's resident representative in PNG during this week's celebration of World Environment Day. Roy Trivedi says the people in PNG prevent deforestation, but they also need financial support from the rest of the world. He told Ben Robinson Drawbridge about the efforts to extend protected areas and threats to conservation in PNG.
It's a fascinating question. Across the world, what we're seeing are a range of challenges to things like conservation movements and protected areas. One of those challenges is definitely population growth, and there is a lot of emphasis now being put within government and non-governmental organizations about making sure that there's good family planning, that Papua New Guinea is able to have population growth, but make sure that people choose to have families by choice rather than chance. The other thing is, of course, in many parts of the world, we're seeing huge amounts of economic growth, which is unsustainable and basically undermines the possibility of protected areas and so on. So whether it's through things like mining, whether it's through different types of producer chains, etc., in particular sectors, it can definitely undermine this thing. The third thing is, of course, deforestation. And in Papua New Guinea, we're also seeing some of the deforestation. So there are definitely challenges. The trick, I think, to make this work, the idea of protected areas, is to ensure that communities see the benefit of this, that there are new jobs created which can ensure that communities are able to earn a decent livelihood. They're actually paid to conserve and protect areas rather than to chop down forests and so on. So this is what the Protected Areas Policy also talks about. How do you create new jobs, new livelihood opportunities against all of the challenges that countries face?
Is that idea, though, dependent on tourism making that sort of protectionism self-sustaining?
Forms of ecotourism and so on is definitely one part. You know, there are not many countries in the world that have this type of possibility, because the majority of industrialized countries, of course, have cut down their forests and so on. But in Papua New Guinea, we have currently about 30% of 1.6 million hectares of terrestrial and marine life established as protected areas. And the aim is to grow this over the next few years and to reach the targets which the government has set for itself, the 17% terrestrial area and 10% marine areas, will require a lot of new ways of working. And part of it is also ensuring that global systems for better management of global resources are fully utilized to contribute money to communities at the grassroots to protect areas rather than chop them down. This is one of the things that UNDP is supporting the government with, is the RED Plus program, which is reducing emissions through deforestation and degradation by ensuring that global systems actually pay people and communities to manage their forests rather than to chop them down. These things actually benefit the globe, not just Papua New Guinea. Having, you know, intact forests, these are things which actually are part of the global commons. It's a difficult argument, though, of course, when the pressures on land, on sea resources are so enormous. Trying to establish these protected areas is not an easy task. And you know, it's no surprise that many countries perhaps have tried this and but have not succeeded completely. But it's great that Papua New Guinea has that option, is still trying to do it, and we've brought some of the kind of leading world experts to be able to advise the Papua New Guinea government on its protected areas policy.
What will the future look like for Pacific people in New Zealand? And what will New Zealand's future look like when it is shaped by a boom in its Pacific population? These are two questions New Zealand's Treasury have mooted in order to glimpse a view of the country's broader future. Dominic Godfrey went along to a recent talk and filed this report.
Treasury, the government's strategic economic policy advisor, runs a series of guest lectures as a source of intellectual stimulation and to foster debate that can broaden its thinking. Auckland University academic and director of the New Zealand Institute of Pacific Research, Toyo Lusulusulu Damon Salesa, was invited to present a Pacific view. Treasury's principal Pacific advisor, Su'a Kevin Thompson, said it's important to have Pacific perspectives reflected in the program.
I think it was really important to bring Damon down to start talking from an academic sort of perspective on what the future looks like, especially around Auckland, which is the critical mass of our population.
A quarter of all children born in Auckland are to Pasifika families. Damon Salesa presented some damning figures on Pasifika and says there needs to be key areas of focus for things to change.
The big thing has to be housing, health, and then quality education.
Dr. Salesa said the fundamental solutions feed into each other.
The number one thing for most New Zealand families is a place to live. And so people need a quality place to live where they can be secure. And particularly when you have children. We need children to be going to the same school or not changing schools frequently. So we need quality housing for families, particularly those that are the poorest in our nation. And too many of them are Pacific.
Dr. Salesa said the way Pacific families engage with schooling in New Zealand also needs to change.
Families with high parental knowledge and high parental engagement tend to have children who do better because those parents are giving them a leg up, they help them make the right choices in schools, whereas too many Pacific parents are struggling to understand a fairly complicated system and are not as connected with the schools as we'd like them to be.
Damon Salesa said government agencies like Treasury need to invest better in the changing face of New Zealand or the entire country may miss opportunities.
The dream in New Zealand is that talent will find opportunity. And we know that talent is distributed equally amongst everyone. There are proportionally as many talented Pacific people as non-Pacific people. So why are those talented Pacific people not finding those opportunities? We have to get them to those opportunities. And that's a struggle across everything we do as a nation. If the smartest kid in the world is born and they're a Cook Islander in South Auckland, we have to live in a country where they will meet every opportunity that they deserve to meet. And at the moment, we're so far from that that it's a problem for New Zealand, for all New Zealanders.
Su'a Kevin Thompson said the open invitation to Dr. Salesa's lecture allowed the broader public sector to benefit.
Not just Treasury, to get a number of senior officials from other government departments who were here this afternoon to actually listen and share some of the information that he obviously possesses, and it's his academic discipline to actually crunch the data in the way that he does and to present it to us again in a way that we can all understand and sort of empathise with.
Treasury's chief economist Tim Ng agreed.
What we hope will happen is that the analysts sitting there to write reports and advice will have a broader perspective on the needs of all citizens in New Zealand and all residents in New Zealand that we're trying to produce policy advice about. So not just reflecting on ourselves as Treasury officials, which are a little bit more homogeneous than the New Zealand population, so that we can take into account those diverse population perspectives that we're trying to serve.
Dr. Salesa said Treasury and other government agencies should be positive about the future.
Pacific people have the ability and the capacity to address all of the problems they face. And the problem is at the moment is that many of the things that we put before them are getting in the way. So a lot of it is about reducing some of the problems we are actually creating in Pacific people's lives so they can better take control of their future.
Toyo Lusulusulu Damon Salesa's Pacific Futures at Treasury is one in a series of guest lectures with a Pacific focus. This is Dominic Godfrey.
And finally on the program, the Pacific Dance Festival will open two nights featuring a collection of items from four Pacific choreographers for a show called Winatoa. It is a celebration of the strength and diversity of Pacific women as Celia Jane Ahole discovered.
Ofitia Sangapolutele has been dancing for 7 years and will feature at the Pacific Dance Festival for the first time. Ms. Sangapolutele's piece is called Ave, meaning to take, in Samoan. She says her contribution to Wahine Toa is about the colonisation of Samoa and a tribute to her deceased mother.
The main influence was dealing with the loss of my mother and just me wanting to be close with her. It still has the idea of colonisation, but within that, it just means myself taking the knowledge that she passed on to me.
The Samoan dancer says her item will include hip-hop, Siwa Samoa and contemporary dance. Ms. Sangapolutele will feature 6 dancers in her piece.
I'm just wanting to tell a story from 6 women and their ideas of colonisation, knowledge from their ancestors and parents, and that's through dance and folklore.
She says her mother's death motivated her to learn more about her culture and express it through dance.
Born in New Zealand, and growing up, my mum put us in that Western environment. We just spoke English, but we did understand Samoan, and we were kind of kept away from the Wha'a Samoa stuff. So when she passed away, I really wanted to learn more about the culture so I could just feel more connected to being Samoan.
Returning to the Pacific Dance Festival is Papua New Guinea choreographer Julia Mangeao Gray. Her solo dance piece titled Found Words is about Pacifica people learning about their history.
How a lot of our knowledge is written and recorded in Balangi system. And so what we find now after colonisation and outside influences on our cultures, a lot of that stuff has been taken away. And so basically it's about how we look for that knowledge, and when we find it, what we do with it, how we keep it in context, I suppose, and make old new old.
Miss Gray says it also draws on traditional Papua New Guinea dance.
I'm traditionally trained, and Papua New Guinea has over 800 living languages, just to give you an idea of how diverse we are. And out of the, I think, over 20 provinces, we have learned dances from 8 of those provinces. What you'll see is not traditional dance. We draw from our traditional movement, and what you'll see is contemporary old movement.
Miss Gray says it's been difficult working alone.
It's a solo work, and that in itself is challenging because as Pacifica people, we do things as a we, not as individuals. It's a true challenge to actually go ahead with a solo work and not feel like, yeah, I'm completely alone.
The show at Wahine Toa at the Mangere Arts Centre will also feature work from Te Paeru Ariki Lulu French and Losalia Milika Pusiaki. This is Sela Jane Aholele.
Well, that's all we have time for on this edition of Focus Asia Pacific. If you want to contact us to let us know what you think of the program, we'd love to hear from you. Our email address is very simple. It's focus@pcjmedia.com. Once again, focus@pcjmedia.com. On behalf of the whole team here at the PCJ Radio International Newsroom, I'm Keith Powell, wishing you well. We'll see you again very soon. Until next time, so long, and bye for now.